You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. Just a quick announcement. I'm trying to grow our listenership, so I hope you'll share Kick-Ass News with two of your friends this week, or better yet, share it with all of your friends on your social media. And if you'd like to pitch in and become a part of what I'm doing here, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews. Whatever you can do to support the podcast is appreciated, and it shows me that you value this little show that I put out every week. Thanks for listening, and now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. It's the bombshell criminal sex scandal that threatened to derail not just one, but both presidential campaigns this year. In 2005, Palm Beach police began an investigation into multiple allegations from underage girls who accused the jet-setting billionaire Jeffrey Epstein of recruiting them as his personal sex slaves and even forcing some of them to have sex with his high-profile friends. Then, in a mysterious twist, the Florida state attorney ignored the Palm Beach Police Department's request for an arrest warrant and instead handed Epstein a sweetheart plea deal in which he only admitted to one count of solicitation of prostitution and served 13 months on work release, which allowed him to spend up to 16 hours a day at his Palm Beach mansion, only returning to jail at night to sleep. It led to widespread speculation on why Epstein got off so easy, much of it focusing on an unusual provision in the deal, which stated that the prosecutors would not charge anyone else associated with Epstein's crimes. All told, 47 accusers have now come forward, and they've even said that Epstein loaned them out to his powerful friends. One of Epstein's underage sex slaves has claimed that she saw Bill Clinton on Epstein's private island known as Orgy Island with two young girls, while a different Jane Doe has refiled a civil suit this month accusing Donald Trump of raping her at Epstein's New York mansion when she was only 13 years old. The horrifying and sensational facts of Epstein's case also captured the interest of best-selling novelist James Patterson and inspired him to make one of his rare forays into nonfiction with a new book called Filthy Rich, A Powerful Billionaire, The Sex Scandal That Undid Him, and All the Justice That Money Can Buy, The Shocking True Story of Jeffrey Epstein, which James Patterson authored with the help of investigative reporter John Connolly with Tim Malloy. It debuted at number 3 on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list, and James Patterson is no stranger to that list. As a matter of fact, he holds the Guinness World Record for the most number 1 New York Times bestsellers, as well as for being the first author in history to sell 1 million ebooks. All told, his books have sold more than 350 million copies to date. In the past decade, he has sold more books than any author, including Stephen King and J.K. Rowling, putting him at the top of Forbes' list of highest-paid authors for the third consecutive year in a row in 2016. He's best known for his thrillers, which include The Phenomenon, that is the Alex Cross series, as well as his Michael Bennett, Women's Murder Club, Daniel X, and Maximum Ride series. More recently, he's also written bestsellers for children's, middle grade, and young adult fiction, and he's donated millions of dollars to encourage Americans of all ages to read more books, leading the National Book Foundation to bestow on Patterson their Literarian Award in 2015 in recognition of his efforts as, quote, a passionate campaigner to make books and reading a national priority. Today, James Patterson is going to join me on the show to talk about his new book and the strange case of Jeffrey Epstein. We'll find out how the mysterious billionaire made his fortune to begin with, and hear just a few of the stories of the 40-plus victims who've come forward accusing him of sexually assaulting or molesting them at ages as young as 12 and 13. James Patterson will talk about how Epstein went about recruiting teenage girls on an almost industrial scale, and how it led Donald Trump to personally ban him from Mar-a-Lago. Speaking of that, I'll ask James Patterson about recent allegations that Epstein facilitated an encounter between one of his underage girls and Donald Trump, as well as other high-profile friends that have included Bill Clinton, Prince Andrew, and Alan Dershowitz. We'll discuss how Epstein finally landed on the Palm Beach police's radar. We'll try to figure out why the Florida state attorney strangely intervened in the investigation and whether this accused pedophile might still get his just desserts. It's the shocking true story of billionaire creep Jeffrey Epstein with best-selling author James Patterson coming up in just a moment. He holds the Guinness World Record for the most number one New York Times bestsellers, and his books, including the wildly popular Alex Cross series, have sold over 350 million copies. His latest book is called Filthy Rich, A Powerful Billionaire, The Sex Scandal That Undid Him, and All the Justice That Money Can Buy, The Shocking True Story of Jeffrey Epstein, which he co-wrote with investigative reporters John Connolly and Tim Malloy. James Patterson, thanks for calling in to talk to me.
Oh, it's great to talk to you.
Now, you don't venture into nonfiction very often. What drew you to this story?
Tim Malloy and I had done a documentary movie about life down here in Palm Beach County, the western end of which is very poor. One of the towns there is just ranked the number one most violent small town in America. And the town I grew up in, Newburgh, was ranked sixth. And so we did this documentary movie, won a couple of Emmys. And we were thinking about maybe doing one about Epstein because Tim was very familiar with the story. He followed it for 8 years. And I was familiar with the story because I've been living here and been hearing about Epstein for quite a while. And then I said, you know what, let's see if there's a book here. Because it's an amazing story.
Yeah, and in the book you say that you lived, I think, a half a mile away from Epstein's house.
Did you? I do. Yeah, I don't know if he goes there anymore, but he's okay. To my knowledge, he still owns the house. It's a couple blocks away.
Prior to the news of this breaking out, had there been rumors floating around about him?
Yeah, I believe there were. And I don't know what I hadn't heard rumors, before the story broke. But I believe some people had. At least they say they had, as I speak to them, nowadays, lately.
You mentioned in the book that he was sort of a Gatsby-like character, and a lot of people didn't really seem to know where his money came from. As best you can tell, how did Epstein make his fortune?
There are a lot of interesting pieces of this book, things that I watched the movie Sully about a week or so ago, and I thought I knew the story, but then I watched the movie and I went, wow, I really didn't know the story. And it's amazing to me that there was so much written about it in the press, and yet a lot of the story didn't come out. It's the same thing with this story. Mm-hmm. It's been written about and things have been written about Epstein, but a lot of it really didn't come out. One of the pieces is just Epstein himself, starting with the fact that he taught at the Dalton School in New York, which is a very good private prep school, right. And he wasn't a college graduate, which is kind of unheard of in prep schools. So that was the first piece. He went from Dalton to he started working with Ace Greenberg because he had met one of Greenberg's kids at Dalton. And then he just continued to make money, which astounded everybody. I mean, he went from having no money to, you know, to becoming a billionaire. One of the big accounts that he had ultimately with his little company was with Wexner out in Ohio. Les Wexner had started The Limited and a few of the other big clothing chains. So we lay out sort of the story of how Epstein went from Coney Island to amassing $1 billion. That's one of the stories.
Yeah, and do you have any idea where his obsession with having sex with underage girls came from, or when that began?
No. We don't know that because, to our knowledge, we weren't familiar with any shrinks that he may or might not have seen. I offered to interview him. You know, we were contacted by his lawyers a couple of times, and I said, look, I'd love to interview him and hear his side of the story, which certainly would have been interesting. He declined to do that. And actually, at the end of the book, I mention this, and I say, here are the questions I would have asked. And the last thing in the book is the question, how do you sleep at night?
Yeah. Yeah, you've written so many thrillers dealing with fictional crimes, murders, the worst possible kind of villains. But when writing a true crime book focusing on such a real-life monster and having to sift through all of these interviews and depositions and evidence of the horrible things this man did to these poor girls, I have to imagine that's a pretty gut-wrenching experience for an author.
Obviously, I write Alex Cross novels and Woman's Murder Club, and kind of nothing compares to this because it's real. It's not a made up story. This really happened, and it's just a mind blower to read this stuff.
Oh yeah, it's horrifying. What did you find to be the most damning or the most shocking evidence against Jeffrey Epstein?
One of the other pieces that is new in this book. And we got it very late in the investigation, were half a dozen police interviews with some of these young girls. And these were interviews with no lawyers present, so they just kind of laid it out.
Wow.
And it makes everything very emotional, and it's no longer kind of an intellectual investigation. It's like,
yeah,
this stuff happened, or these young women certainly said it happened, and it's six different kinds of story, but all comparable in terms of going to Epstein's house and what happened up in his bedroom. And it's just extraordinary in terms of, okay, this really happened.
Yeah.
At least according to these girls. And I can't imagine any way that all of them could have come up with stories that had some of these common elements. They didn't know each other. And then, you know, apparently, as far as we can tell from police records, these girls were recruited, you know,
yeah,
outside local high schools and junior high schools. And that's another extraordinary piece of the story.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the magnitude of his crimes and the fact that he was recruiting them on such a large scale, finding high school girls to recruit other high school girls, bringing young girls from overseas under the guise of recruiting them as models, supposedly. There's also this friend, Ghislaine Maxwell, the socialite and the wealthy daughter of the late disgraced British media baron Robert Maxwell, who was a close friend of Epstein's and, according to testimony, had introduced underage girls to him under the guise of recruiting them to be quote-unquote masseuses for him.
Well, we never say that.
Okay.
It came up in some interviews.
Right.
But we don't say that she was involved in that respect. I mean,
right,
she certainly was a very close friend with Epstein during this period, and
right,
she saw a lot of him, but I wouldn't make that step.
Well, there's also this photographer associated with Epstein named Jean-Luc Brunel, who apparently did not have a very good reputation in the legitimate modeling industry. And in the book, you talk about the fact that his supposed modeling agency was flying in a lot of very young girls from overseas, places like Central Europe, who may have ended up interacting with Epstein as well.
I believe that he had it. I think he had that the model agency before Epstein.
Okay.
They certainly became friendly. I believe that he stayed in Epstein's house in Palm Beach when Epstein was in jail, or at least part of the time. Beyond that, there's a lot of things here where if we didn't have it, you know, really definitive information, we didn't put it in the book.
Right, right.
But there definitely was a relationship there. There certainly were allegations against him and the modeling agency by young women. And he and Epstein were certainly friendly.
Was there evidence that some of the underage models who were recruited to the agency also accused Epstein of having sexual relations with him?
Was
there
I
any
don't
overlap
recall.
That you found?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Well, how did this first appear on the Palm Beach police's radar?
One of the girls told her parents that she had had this experience. The parents, I think on one level, they kind of didn't want to do anything. But on the other hand, they just said, we have to. They went to the police. The girl was then interviewed by the police. And that began a very careful investigation because, obviously, the police, you know, didn't want to make a mistake on this kind of thing. One, it's in Palm Beach. And secondly, you've got this very wealthy man involved, and you want to make sure that there isn't, they wanted to make sure that they had all their ducks in a row. And they interviewed several young women. As I said, we have on tape, or we have, you know, six of the tapes are in the book, or at least parts of them. And they felt they had really had built a really strong case. And the next thing they heard, and which is the other one of the other amazing things about this story, they got word that the case had been settled, and that that Epstein had been sentenced to 13 months in jail.
Yeah, that was one of the most shocking things about this. I mean, if we're to believe all of these young girls, I think dozens who have come forward, he should have been locked away for life. But instead, he receives what, by any standard, would be considered this appallingly light sentence.
When he did go to, he went to in jail down here. They didn't put him in with the general population. They, you know, they kept him separate. And every morning, a car would come and pick him up, and he would go off to work or whatever. And then he'd get brought back late in the day. So that was the way he. And you know, you can imagine. I mean, it's certainly common sense would say that if somebody had been arrested and it seemed to be a lot of evidence that this person had been involved with a lot of underage girls, you would think it would go to trial. It would have been a sensational trial, an unbelievable trial, and just in terms of what happened, and also the people who were involved. I mean, you know, the lawyers who he had lined up included Alan Dershowitz, I'm blanking on the.
Aside from Dershowitz, we have Gerald Leftcourt was on his team, who defended Harry Helmsley, Michael Milken, Russell Crowe, among others, Roy Black, who got William Kennedy Smith off on rape charges and also represented Rush Limbaugh in his OxyContin case. And, of course, there was even Ken Starr.
Ken Starr, yeah. So it was another dream team, which brings to mind the O.J. Trial. So that would have been big. The charges against Epstein, I think, would have been pretty shocking. And then some of the other people who not that they were involved in the crimes, but who knew Epstein, which ranged from Donald Trump to Bill Clinton to Prince Andrew, you know. So there was a lot of juicy material here in terms of a trial. And I think the book is as close as we're going to get to a trial, although who knows what will happen in the future.
Could there still be a civil trial?
I mean, there are still lawsuits pending. Right. You know, some of the girls are still, I mean, they won't get money out of it, but I think, you know, they just want to see, they don't think justice was done.
Right. And it sounds like Palm Beach Police Chief Ryder really didn't think so either. I mean, he even wrote a letter of protest to the state attorney. And it's a shame because from everything that I read in the book, it sounds like his detectives were extremely careful and very thorough, and they crossed their T's and dotted all their I's in building this case against
Epstein. They certainly seemed to have, and they were very involved in it. It was very emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these people had, you know, families and kids and whatever. And you know, and for anybody, I mean, it's just an emotional situation if indeed this guy was guilty.
Right. It struck me as a little fishy, or at the very least, highly unusual, because by all accounts, the police put countless hours and manpower into building a very solid case against Epstein. But then, when they were ready to get an arrest warrant for Epstein, this state attorney at the time, Barry Kirshner, intervened and shot that down and instead chose to convene a grand jury and then didn't even call the girls to testify in the grand jury hearing. According to Police Chief Ryder, Kirshner seemed to be, quote, stacking the deck in Epstein's favor. Do you have any theories as to why the state attorney chose not to pursue Epstein more aggressively and in the end gave him such a sweetheart deal?
Well, the rumor that we heard several times was just that the attorneys down here, the government attorneys, were just in awe of the Dream Team and afraid that somehow this thing would, that they would lose the case somehow.
Wow.
Which, you know, Ryder just didn't see how they could lose it. So he and his detectives were, of course, shocked and terribly upset by it, because they did think that they had built a very careful and thorough case and certainly wanted to see it go to trial.
Did Epstein claim that he didn't know that these girls were underage?
There was some, once again, in terms of the police records and some of the things that the young woman said, you know, as they were subpoenas, et cetera. There was some evidence that the girls were told not to tell him how young they were.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know, you would think that, you can tell if somebody's 14 or 15 versus being 20.
Well, yeah, and in the book, you included photos of several of these girls who've come forward publicly to accuse Epstein. And looking at the pictures which were taken on Epstein's yacht and at his homes at the time of these incidents, anyone with any common sense can tell that they're nowhere near 18 years old. I mean, they're just children. And I'm completely amazed at the brazenness of Jeffrey Epstein. Because in the book, you say that he even had naked photos of these underage girls lining the hallway upstairs at his Palm Beach mansion. And you say at one point, possibly when he suspected that he might have been in trouble, he shows up at Chief Ryder's office with a $90,000 donation check to buy some state-of-the-art gun simulation machine for the police department. Is that right?
I don't. I think the donations, I think, were earlier.
Okay.
Once. You know, once the police started investigating this, I don't think he tried to make any more donations, and I'm sure that Ryder wouldn't have allowed him to at that point.
You would think so. But again, the brazenness of this guy, apparently when he must have gotten wind of the investigation, he had private eyes following and some would perhaps say intimidating these young girls and their families. And even the officers at the Palm Beach PD claimed that Epstein had hired private investigators to follow the detectives who were investigating him and try and dig up dirt on there. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, that was certainly part of the, you know, and a lot of strange things. I mean, along the way, at one point, the editor of Vanity Fair, Vanity Fair was preparing a story on it back then. And the editor went into his office one morning, you know, 7 o'clock or so, and he turns on the light in his office, and Epstein was in his office.
Oh, that's creepy.
And I think
that's out of a movie.
Kind of scared the hell out of him. Very creepy. And basically, Epstein said, "Take the girls out of the story." And for whatever reasons, Vanity Fair did take the girls out of the story.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with author James Patterson when we come back in just a minute. If you're interested in my conversation today, you should check out Filthy Rich, A Powerful Billionaire, The Sex Scandal That Undid Him, and All the Justice That Money Can Buy, The Shocking True Story of Jeffrey Epstein, by my guest today, best-selling author James Patterson. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be Filthy Rich by James Patterson or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews, or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. I think the only reason Vanity Fair was even doing an article on him was because he started hanging out with Bill Clinton and getting involved with the Clinton Foundation. And I think you said Bill Clinton flew on Epstein's 727, later dubbed the Lolita Express, something like 26 times, including on a trip to Africa, which got a lot of press attention. And because no one seemed to know much about this mysterious billionaire Jeffrey Epstein, Graydon Carter decided to do a Vanity Fair article on him, but it sounds like he probably might have gotten away with this for a lot longer and been able to stay under the radar if he hadn't started hanging out with a former president and attracting all this attention, flying him all over the world in his jet.
That certainly made it a larger story. We had, you know, and we would have really anywhere where we had a lot of evidence, but and we did talk to pilots, you know, who were pilots for the plane, for Epstein's plane and whatever. And nothing negative came up about Clinton or Trump, either one of them.
Okay.
When Trump apparently, according to the records, Epstein made some advances at one of the girls, you know, who frequented Trump's place.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And when Trump heard about it, he basically banned Epstein from the grounds.
Right. You said Trump had him banned from Mar-a-Lago because one of the members complained directly to Trump that Epstein had invited his young daughter over to his house and tried to get her to take her clothes off. So apparently Trump told Epstein he was persona non grata at Mar-a-Lago. I think you also say in the book that one of Epstein's alleged victims was recruited by Epstein's friend Ghislaine Maxwell while the girl was working as a locker room attendant at Mar-a-Lago.
I don't think we said that Ghislaine. I could be wrong, but I don't think we did.
I had thought that there was one in there. I thought it was Virginia Roberts was a changing room assistant at Mar-a-Lago when she met Maxwell.
No, Virginia was definitely a girl who was involved, but I don't think we tied it to Ghislaine. For sure, she and Epstein were very friendly during this time. In terms of any involvement with her and the girls, we don't really, nothing came out that we felt we could use. There's nothing that we wrote about in terms of Ghislaine recruiting anybody.
No, I think it's in the book.
As I said.
You know, let me look. Here, hold on. I think I have it here. Okay, on page 132 to 133, if you'll allow me to quote your book.
Yeah.
It says here, a woman named Virginia Roberts, according to a court document Virginia filed in her civil lawsuit against Epstein, she was a changing room assistant at Mar-a-Lago earning about $9 an hour when Ghislaine Maxwell approached her. Maxwell asked Virginia if she was interested in learning to be a massage therapist, which it turned out she was. Like the other girl, Virginia told her father, who was also employed at Mar-a-Lago as a maintenance man, but Virginia's father saw nothing wrong with the offer, and he drove her later that day to Epstein's house on El Brillo Way. There, according to the document, Maxwell assured Virginia's father that Miss Maxwell would provide transportation home for his teenage daughter. Then she led Virginia upstairs to a spa room equipped with a shower and a massage table, Jeffrey Epstein was lying naked on the table. Continuing on here, it says here in your book, Miss Maxwell then took off her shirt and left on her underwear and started rubbing her breasts across Jeffrey's body, impliedly showing Virginia what she was expected to do. The filing continues, Miss Maxwell then told Virginia to take off her clothes. The minor girl was apprehensive about doing this, but in fear, proceeded to follow Miss Maxwell by removing everything but her underwear. She was then ordered to remove her underwear and straddle Epstein. The encounter escalated with Jeffrey and Miss Maxwell sexually assaulting, battering, exploiting, and abusing Virginia in various ways and in various locations, including the steam room and the shower. At the end of this sexually exploitive abuse, Epstein and Miss Maxwell giddily told Virginia to return the following day and told her she had, quote, lots of potential. At the time, Virginia was 15 years old. That's right here in the book.
Yeah, that was certainly, I think that's accurate.
Yeah, and in the plea deal, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a weird provision that said no one else would be charged in connection with this. Is that right?
Yeah.
Could one assume that that was perhaps to protect some of the more high-profile names that he was mixed up with?
Can't really make that assumption, and we didn't get anything.
Too much of a leap.
Yeah, we didn't get anything on
but
that.
But would you say that's a strange provision in a plea deal to protect other people involved?
That would seem to be unusual, yes.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been his house staff since they didn't seem to get protected.
Yeah, and among them was Epstein's gardener, Alfredo Rodriguez, who was convicted for stealing some of Epstein's papers, including papers that had dates and names of underage girls and places he had taken them. They also included names and phone numbers for people like Henry Kissinger, Mick Jagger, Dustin Hoffman, David Koch, Ted Kennedy, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, Bill Richardson, and Ehud Barak.
Yeah, once again, I can't. Yes, that is accurate, but, you know, a lot of people have.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have a book with a bunch of names in it, too, but it doesn't mean that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because some of these men, like Ted Kennedy, Trump, Clinton, Mick Jagger, aren't exactly Boy Scouts, and they've had sex scandals of their own. So I was going to ask, in these papers, are those names of young girls and those dates and locations and trips in any way involved or related to some of these other well-known names, or were they from completely unrelated documents?
Anything where we had clear evidence that somebody was implicated, we implicated them.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There was nothing in terms of any of the names in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And even things where, you know, at a certain point, and we had three sets of lawyers vet everything in the book.
Yeah, I'm sure you had to be careful.
But even... That isn't even material that was vetted, you know, because of the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't anything.
Yeah,
that we dug up, and we, you know, we between myself and Tim and Connolly, there was a lot of investigation that went on. Not to mention Ryder and everything that they had been able to get. And you know, and there were accusations recently about Donald Trump and a 12-year-old, mm-hmm. but. Once again, it doesn't sound, certainly when I read those things, that doesn't sound very credible to me.
Really? I believe you're referring to a woman who has refiled a civil suit against Trump just this month, in which she alleges that Trump and Epstein raped her at a party at Epstein's New York apartment when she was just 13 years old. And in the complaint, at least one other girl claims to have witnessed it. What is it that seems suspect to you about her story?
You know, just as a lot of people are jumping on different bandwagons now, you know.
Yeah.
And probably some are credible and a lot of them aren't. We never heard anything about Trump, any kind of involvement with young girls. And whenever there was, you know, anything involving young girls, he seemed to just totally walk away from it.
I wonder, do you know if the date of these allegations matches up or was after or before Trump had Epstein banned from Mar-a-Lago?
the allegations of the 12-year-old?
Yeah, the recent allegations.
Sure what
I wonder where that fits in the timeline.
It's a ways back. It might have been. Not sure, honestly. Yeah, because that was never part of our story. I mean, that just came out recently.
Because early on, he is quoted as saying Epstein's a great guy or something along those lines.
That's typical Trump, though.
Yeah,
Trump has you're either a great guy or you're a piece of shit with him. I mean, there isn't any, you know, there's no middle ground. So if he's okay with you or, you know, great guy, you know.
Yeah.
So that's not unusual. And I don't think it really means anything with respect to Trump.
Yeah. And
a lot of people, by the way, a lot of people felt that Epstein was a great guy.
That's what I was going to say.
And a lot of his friends stuck with him right through this thing, even when we talked to them.
Yeah, everyone talks about how charming and brilliant he is.
And they knew that this had come up. They knew he'd been convicted, and they still thought he was a real friend.
Yeah. Were you surprised at how many prominent figures and personal friends of Jeffrey Epstein stood by him and praised him even after his conviction?
He's a complicated character. He's very smart. He's somewhat charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could handle his own with the Clintons and Kissingers and Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a weird one, too. You know, Stephen Hawking going to the island. I mean, let's assume it was just, but it's just strange.
Right. The infamous island. He had this private island in the U.S. Virgin Islands, ironically. And I guess the locals took to calling it Orgy Island. Is that right?
Well, there have been a few, you know, Lolita's
Island
and, you know. Yeah.
And I believe one of the girls claimed to have seen Bill Clinton on the island with a couple of young girls. I know you talked to one of his pilots who had flown Clinton around on his plane. Did you see any flight records or any evidence that Bill Clinton may have at the very least visited this so-called Orgy Island?
I believe he may have been there.
Okay. Okay.
But now, once again, there wasn't anything we got in terms of his being involved, or Stephen Hawking, or Trump. And if we had, we would have put it in the book. And once again, these aren't things that were pulled out by lawyers. There was nothing that we came up with.
Right. You were primarily focused on Epstein himself.
What we know is that according to, you know, any records we could find, Epstein was involved with several young girls. And that's primarily what the story was.
Yeah.
And then how, you know, insofar as we could figure it out, why did this thing never wind up in court?
Yeah.
And who is this guy, Jeffrey Epstein?
Right.
And that was our story. And the girls.
As best you know, how many women have gone on the record against him?
How many there were?
Yeah.
Well, according to police records, at least 40.
Wow. Underage girls.
Most, yes.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know if they, you know, all of them were underage, but
yeah. And I was amazed that in one case, one girl was saying that he even was telling her that he wanted her to file for emancipation and move out of her parents' house and move in with him.
It doesn't seem far-fetched.
Yeah. 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 It's just remarkable. Now, as far as we know, he's pretty much gotten off now. Was an FBI investigation, right? Where is that?
As I said earlier, some of the girls have, you know, tried to continue to bring lawsuits against them. So far,
nothing has
happened, and certainly the district attorneys down here have not cooperated very much. They don't want to open this thing up again.
Oh, really? Why not?
I think they feel that justice was done.
Hmm. Wow. Doesn't seem like it to me, but where is the FBI investigation? Is that a closed case now, or is that ongoing?
I don't know where it is. I don't know what the state of that is right now.
Okay. I wonder, do you have any idea what his world is like today? Is he shunned in Palm Beach society, or does he still have respectability?
I don't think anybody's seen him here. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. Yeah. I have a friend who actually lives on that street, and nobody has seen him for quite a while. There was a period when some people who either were on the street or visited the street said, "This is so strange. We just see so many like pretty girls going to that house at the end of the street." but of late, I don't think anybody's seen him. There was a sort of interesting piece that the New York Daily News wrote a little thing the week before the book came out, saying that friends of Epstein had told him to get out of town for a month or so when the book hit. You know, when the cover has him on the cover.
And he's never reached out to you? He hasn't tried to file a lawsuit or anything against the publisher?
Now, as I said, there was, well, the lawyers reached to, spoke to us initially, mainly saying that, we shouldn't be publishing things that were in the media because they're not accurate. So that was sort of the extent of it. And as I said, I certainly offered to give him his, let him lay out his case.
What is your process like? Is it different when you work on a nonfiction book than when you're doing, say, the Alex
because,
Cross series?
You know, with I mean, I wrote another nonfiction, The Murder of King Tut, and as a fiction writer, I didn't want Tut to die, and I can do that in fiction. I can just change stuff. Here, you're the facts are the facts, so it's much more constricted. In terms of what you can say. I still, I wanted the story to be very readable. I find a lot of nonfiction to be kind of plodding. And, because of the lawyers, I think the thing is a little more disjointed than I would have liked in terms of really telling the story in a very dramatic fashion. And
well, don't be too hard on yourself.
I enjoyed
it.
It's definitely readable, and it's as I said, it's the closest we're going to get to a trial, at least so far. Maybe something will happen in the future.
Yeah.
And the pieces are stunning, I think.
Yeah. And you wrote it with John Connolly and Tim Malloy. Do you like collaborating with other writers? I always think of writers as being, the lone guy with a typewriter,
Oh, yeah. No, I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
This is different because, in the fiction, I will do the outline and, people give me pages every couple of weeks and I go, keep going or hold it. We're off the tracks here. This is a little different. And in fiction, I can change things.
Right,
I can go, okay, well, that was going to, but she didn't do it. He did it.
No lawyers to deal with in fiction, huh?
Yeah, you can't. Well, there's that. And reality. Here are the facts. Here's what really happened. And we tried to be as fair as we could be to everybody involved.
Yeah.
So if we didn't have the evidence, we just, we're not going to, it's not the National Enquirer.
Yeah, well, it's a very compelling read. I would recommend it to anyone, and I hope one day this guy gets his justice. Again, the book is called Filthy Rich, A Powerful Billionaire, The Sex Scandal That Undid Him, and All the Justice That Money Can Buy, The Shocking True Story of Jeffrey Epstein by James Patterson with John Connolly and Tim Malloy. James Patterson, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to James Patterson for joining me. If you enjoyed today's podcast, then you can order his book, Filthy Rich, A Powerful Billionaire, The Sex Scandal That Undid Him, and All the Justice That Money Can Buy, The Shocking True Story of Jeffrey Epstein. It's available on Amazon, or you can download the audio version for free through that special trial offer just for our listeners from audibletrial.com/kickassnews. He also has a new novel in his wildly successful Alex Cross series called Cross the Line, coming out in time for your holiday reading on November 21st. Keep up with James Patterson on his website at jamespatterson.com, or you can follow him on Twitter at @JP_books. Be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kick-Ass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter @KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.